New research calls for improved stewardship of antimicrobials, including antibiotics, and chemicals found in personal care and cleaning products to protect human and ecological health. The recently released review of the role of emerging organic contaminants, or EOCs, which are also found in pharmaceuticals and agrochemicals, examines the effect they're having on antimicrobial resistance, including antibiotic resistance, and the threats to the prevention and treatment of infections caused by bacteria, parasites, viruses, and fungi. Antibiotics are used in the treatment of bacterial infections and particularly critical to surgery procedures. But for years, attention has been focused on the impact of the overuse of antibiotics. Antimicrobials, of which antibiotics are one class, are used in the treatment of infections caused by fungus, parasites, and virus, not just bacteria. The work published in the journal Emerging Contaminants has been done by the Institute of Environmental Science and Research in collaboration with Massey University, the University of Canterbury, and the Cawthron Institute. Cawthron Institute. Two of the authors are ESR Senior Technician Izzy Alderton, who's in Wellington. Kia ora, Izzy.
Kia ora, Catherine.
And Atamari, and welcome also to Environmental Toxicologist at the Cawthron Institute in Nelson, Louis Tremblay. Izzy, do you want to start in just defining what we're talking about here when we talk about these emerging organic contaminants?
So my research is part of a wider collaboration that we have looking at these chemicals that we call emerging organic contaminants. And they are natural or synthetic chemicals that are generally not monitored in the environment. So sometimes the emerging organic part can be a little confusing, but it's just classifying what we don't already monitor our environment. And we are looking at in the wider program, their presence in New Zealand, and specifically at ESR, I'm looking at how these chemicals are linked with antibiotic resistance, which we know is a growing global problem in the clinical sense, but this is looking at it with an environmental perspective.
So it's not just that we need antibiotics to safely have surgery or safely have wounds heal, it's that there's a wider impact in the broader environment.
Yes.
What is that impact?
When you have all the chemicals that we use in different industries, but also those that you use at home, it's what happens to them when they go down the pipe and then get released out into our environment and can affect the bacteria that live out in our environment. And some of those bacteria can also be pathogens to humans, so they can cause disease in humans. And what happens if those bacteria that are out in the environment get resistance to antibiotics or gain resistance genes that they can then share with other bacteria? They kind of, in essence, can cuddle each other and share this ability to become resistant, which has the potential to then come back into the human chain and then affect our ability to treat in common infections with antibiotics because of how they've gained this resistance, and that is a major public health concern.
So they can actually sort of feed off each other, as you say, or cuddle each other and develop almost a super resistance.
Yes, they can have the ability to get resistance to just one kind of antibiotics, or there are different classes of antibiotics, and some forms of resistance allow you to have this to the different classes, which can then make treatment even harder. And we already have a limited number of antibiotics available, so this will sort of compound the problem from the environmental source, not just from clinical.
So not just from us taking them too often, or taking them, nagging the doctor and getting them for when we don't need them, for example when we have a virus. It's not just this, it's about what's going down the drain as well. You mentioned, so there's the antibiotics themselves, and then there's these additives to Well, let's first talk about the personal care products and what goes into some soaps and other things that is part of the problem.
So in some of the personal care products, they put antimicrobials that help kill, they're like broad spectrum and help kill a wide variety of different bacteria and viruses also. So like your hand sanitizers and antibacterial soaps. It's some of the ingredients that are found in those kind of products, but also they get used in deodorants, soaps, hand washes. So they're used on a broad spectrum level in our houses, but we don't really know what the effects those chemicals might have.
What are some of the particular chemicals of concern? Triclosan, I know, is one that we've discussed in the past. Or is that how you pronounce it?
I say triclosan, okay, but I don't actually know what's correct.
No, yours will be correct. And we've talked about this in the past. It is one. Are they necessary? Obviously, we're highly aware at the moment in a pandemic of hygiene and a lot of hand washing and everything else. But are some of these additives actually really doing anything at all, and particularly in normal times when you're using soap or deodorant?
Probably on a wide level, they're not entirely necessary. They just get added to your items at home, and people think that because they get advertised as being helpful, they're not. But they're not entirely necessary. You don't need to have them, but maybe in more specific circumstances, like at hospitals, their use might be more needed, but in your general household, perhaps not.
I don't know why I need an antimicrobial deodorant, frankly. In fact, some people say we overuse deodorants, full stop. So that's some of what we're talking about in the personal care. Some common pharmaceuticals are also going into waterways, and is that a problem? Is this why we need to be very careful with the stewardship of pharmaceuticals we've stopped using?
Yes, some pharmaceuticals, such as some of the antidepressants, but also some of the ones that we use for pain management, have been linked with the development of resistance.
Ibuprofen, I understand?
Yes, that is a commonly used drug everywhere and has been linked with the development of resistance. But there's also other work that demonstrates that these chemicals have other effects in our waterways, such as the little critters and bigger animals that live in our waterways.
Obviously, some people, we were always told to take any unused pharmaceuticals back to a pharmacy. However, are some people just flushing them?
Yes, that does happen a lot of the time. I think a lot of people don't do that.
And is there also an issue with the hospital's own waste disposal mechanisms?
Not necessarily with the hospital's own waste disposals, because they would have the correct mechanisms. But it's what happens to that waste water as you have like the cleaning chemicals that might get flushed down the drain. It's what happens to those when they go to our wastewater treatment plants, and then they get mixed in with everything else that gets used from municipal wastewater too.
Is this another issue, that our wastewater plants aren't really up to scratch in dealing with a lot of what is being sent their way?
In essence, yes, they're not perhaps as good at removing all the contaminants that get flushed around the drain. They can remove a proportion of that, but some still gets pumped out into our waterways.
About 40% gets removed of these chemicals, yes. Which means 60% aren't. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other kinds of chemicals are some of these agricultural chemicals as well?
That can have an influence and pose a risk to creating resistance to, yes.
Overall, what is the picture when you add it all together? How significant is the feeding ground and the breeding ground of this antimicrobial resistance?
On the whole, It's the environment is quite large and how much we put into that. So there is a large risk in what we put down into our environment, but it's actually not well understood the risk of that then coming back into humans. But it's significant in terms of what goes out there, but what we also don't know just yet, which is part of our research program.
Well, what's worrying about the very definition of these emerging contaminants is that they're not monitored and are a vast number not monitored.
A large number of them are probably not monitored, as with chemicals, new ones are being produced every day that are very similar but slightly different to the ones we already have. So there's just an infinite number of chemicals that you would need to look for.
Izzy, who needs to be monitoring and making decisions about this? Because the conclusion of your group is that it is complex, it's a multifaceted problem, it involves a lot of different organisations and a lot of different behaviours. But ultimately, is it someone like the Environmental Protection Authority, the EPA, that has oversight or ought to have oversight of this and the implications?
Yes, but it's also, I guess, on a wider sense, needs to involve like a One Health approach where you draw in not just the environmental side, like the EPA, but also the human health and clinical side, but also animal health. But it would also involve, say, like your government and policymakers, as it's all about how you use the chemicals, how you safely evaluate the chemicals, what they can chemicals can be used for, but
But who
also how you
determines
just
that now? Sorry to interrupt you. Who determines that now?
I
Louis, come in.
I should probably step in here. Part of that, the MBIE-funded project that where we're looking at, characterization and assessment of the risk of those, what we call emerging organic contaminants. I think it's quite important to mention here that we are also working in parallel with a national advisory panel of experts from those different government agencies that are involved in the management and monitoring of the environment. And I think it's quite important. It's been mentioned before that there are lots of chemicals that we're using in society, and then a lot are being released. But I think it's important to identify and confirm the ones that are persistent and that are, entering the environment. So then the next step is around, what are the risks that they're posing for the ecosystems and ultimately for the humans. So I think there's a little bit of selection or ranking of those chemicals. So once we've identified the ones that are posing a higher risk, we can then start looking at how can we better manage them and how can we influence as well policy in order to reduce their release.
As Izzy pointed out,
So
they keep on coming. And if we just take triclosan, I'm pretty sure a case was taken off to the EPA with respect to triclosan. Just correct me if I'm wrong, it's coming from memory. But
yes,
there was a case taken, right? So that's just
there was
one.
a yes, and I guess from a clinical perspective, and triclosan is a very important chemical because it's one of the tools that we have to manage microbes, and I guess it goes back to what Izzy was mentioning around a better use of those chemicals to ensure that they retain their efficacy. But then, reduce the impact on the environment when they're not really well used. Like, for instance, if you have triclosan in a liquid hand soap, well, it doesn't do the job that it's supposed to do on your hands because, ideally you would have to keep the soap on your hands for a few minutes until it is active. But, when you wash your hands, you don't want to stay there. So you just rinse them straight away. So basically it goes from your hands into the waste. So we have to be a bit smarter as to how we're using those chemicals that are very effective at what they're doing, but we want to make sure that they retain that
Well,
efficacy.
that's the whole point. The way we're using them means we may lose the efficacy. And I come back, the reason I ask about whether there is one organisation with oversight or whether there is a schedule that is overseen by one agency is that whenever there are multi-agencies doing multiple things, we know what happens, not much and not very quickly. So they can all bring the information to the table. They can all do their independent monitoring. I'm not sure if that's even happening. But in the end, someone has to say, you cannot use this particular antimicrobial in flowing soap or whatever. There has to be some kind of decision made by someone at some point, especially when you are dealing with potentially multiple additives. So, do you have a sense, Louis, of whether we're making any progress and whether the system we have is fit for purpose to actually do something about this?
I think there is a way more openness for cohesion across those different sectors, like you mentioned, Catherine, and then Izzy mentioned the One Health umbrella, and I think this is really an area that or a model that can be used when dealing with issues of for the environment and for human health, because you see, you can bring the different required expertise under an umbrella to make sure that we tackle those problems that our social scientists are calling wicked problems. It's a little bit like climate change is another one. You need many people contributing, and it doesn't end on the desk of one particular organization. It's really a question of having cohesion around experts from those different agencies working together, and then alongside the scientists as well, to tackle those issues, and then also raise awareness within the wider community,
But a
because I
bit like
think we're
climate
all on the
change,
same boat.
yeah, a bit
Yep.
like climate change, Louis, we're getting a bit short on time. We've only had antibiotics for what, around a century. And we don't have forever to deal with some of these problems any more than we do with climate. And I'm curious as to what you believe, and you've already mentioned it, and Izzy, you might want to come back in here as well. Really, what is going to shift behaviour change? Having the information in various sectors is a starting point. Perhaps some regulation, perhaps some consumer pressure. But again, it appears to be slow moving. And can each of you perhaps just sum up with what you hope will happen as a result of the work you're doing? Izzy, you go first, I'll pick.
Okay. So I would hope that it's a mix of effort from the sort of more policy, government, different agencies, but it's also education for everyone that uses these chemicals and potentially learning more about what they actually do and what goes in there. So comes from both sides, as we shouldn't just rely on agencies to try and fix the problem. It's
Excellent.
everyone needs to come together.
Excellent. Louis, do you want to ask last word?
Yeah, I think this is a really good point. I mean, it's for us, it's a question of making sure that we generate that information that really identify and characterize the risk of those chemicals. And then it's very important to communicate it in a way that people can understand and hopefully influence them, because we work as part of a multidisciplinary team, and then we're working with social scientists, and the one thing that is important is it doesn't mean that you have all the chips aligned that people will change, because people don't really change their behavior. I mean, a good example is smoking. I mean, we have all the information about the harm of smoking, the chemicals that goes into your lungs, and the diseases that you will develop, but people are still smoking. So the question is to we need to continue to work together to ensure that, you know, the vision where we want to go is shared by everybody, and then everybody is on board to contribute to the solution and not, you know, contribute to the problem.
Well, what we did in the end was tax smoking to the point where it was beyond the finances of many people, and many people did quit or shift. Maybe the price of some products needs to go through the roof. I don't know. Thanks very much for the work you're doing. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time, Izzy Elderton and Louis Tremblay. 9 minutes to 10.